This past week, I was asked a question, which I thought was rather interesting. The man said, why is it that in the book of Genesis, why doesn't Yahweh use his name in that first chapter? His name doesn't appear at all. Well, there's another reason I'd like to discuss this a little bit, because there is a group that says the word Elohim is a pagan word, that it came from the Canaanites and that therefore they don't want to use it. So what they have done is taken the name Yahweh and put it here in the book of Genesis. And every place that I've looked of all of the Hebrew writings, I find that the book of Genesis starts out and uses the word Elohim. In fact, the third word in the Bible that I've been able to examine, it is Elohim. Bereshit bara Elohim. In the beginning, Elohim. Why does he use the name title Elohim and not use his name? Well, Elohim, as you probably know, El means mighty one or a mighty person. And the I am ending on it is a plural word. He makes it plural, more than one. Much like we talk about a school, we talk about a board, we talk about a class, we talk about a group. And it takes a singular verb, but it has more than one individual involved. What Yahweh is doing here in this book of Genesis, he's showing that he is the Almighty. He's showing us that he created everything. Anything that has life, he created. Anything that has substance, matter, that he also created. He created it from his own energy and created it from ex nihilo, from nothing, as it used to be said in the old textbooks. He created it from nothing and made the earth, the planets, and everything we have on this earth. And he is showing that each day there was something he did to bring together a planet called Earth, where he would eventually instill the man that he was making to be modeled after his own self and after his son, Yahshua. Elohim, of course, means that he is a mighty one. And we're to remember that he is the one that is the creator. He wants us to remember that because he often refers to himself as, I am Yahweh Elohim. I am Yahweh, your mighty one. I am the one that is a creator. I am the one that wants you to be like me. And I'll give you the way you can do it. If you follow my laws and keep my commandments, my statutes and my judgments. So here we have, in the first chapter, we don't see the word Yahweh at all. But it's all about creation. And he even goes down to the last couple verses of this chapter, talks about creating mankind. After he creates the earth for the benefit of man, where he's going to put man, and where man will eventually take over the rule of of this entire earth and part of the universe eventually. It isn't until we get into the second chapter that we find Yahweh's name appears. And interestingly enough, it's in the fourth verse. We read there, these are the generations of the heavens and the earth. Now, the word generations can also mean family, because Yahweh has prepared this earth for the family of human beings. And that is what it's created for, to replicate himself. And this is why he says in verse 4, these are the generations of the heavens of the earth when they were created in the day that Yahweh Elohim made the earth and the heavens, and every plant of the field before it was in the earth, and every herb before it grew, and so on. And it says, for Yahweh Elohim had not caused it to rain upon the earth, and there was not yet a man upon the earth to till the ground. So he has everything in preparation now. Everything's ready for mankind to make his appearance. And this is why he uses his name Yahweh, because he is going to be the one that will be the guide, the teacher, the creator, everything that we are, we owe to Him. As we look at this again in I want to move on down from chapter 2 here, down to verse 19. And you find here that it says, "And out of the ground Yahweh Elohim formed every beast of the field, every fowl of the air, and He brought them unto Adam." Adam, of course, is actually the representative of all mankind, because from him came Eve, and from Eve came all mankind. So what He's saying here is that He is giving man jurisdiction, rulership over the earth. And notice He says, "And out of the ground Yahweh Elohim formed every beast of the field, every fowl of the air, and brought them unto Adam to see what He would call them. And whatsoever Adam called every living creature, that was the name thereof. And Adam gave names to all cattle, to the fowl of the air, to every beast of the field. But for Adam, there was not found an helpmeet for him." So then we find that in verse 21, He caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam. And by the way, it's been quite a while ago now. I remember a lady wanted to know if it was proper that if someone goes to the hospital, they would take some sort of analgesic to be able to withstand the pain. And I said, well, when Adam was in the garden and Yahweh wanted to make Eve, He caused a deep sleep to come upon Adam. So what's wrong with that? He made a sleep to come upon Adam, and from him took the rib and made or fashioned Eve. I don't know why people get off on these tangents. They think that anything you take in medicine or something is wrong. It's all, I don't know, they get funny ideas. But I think when you look at the history, Yahweh is not trying to make us suffer and trying to give us the hard time and make the things difficult for us. In fact, it's just the opposite. So Adam named the animals. He named the birds. He named every living thing, it says here. But there was not found a helpmeet for him. Well, as we move on to chapter 4, here we find in this fourth chapter that this helpmeet that Adam was now given, it says, "And Adam knew his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from Yahweh." Again, here we have a human being giving credit to Yahweh. And we'll find when we get to the book of Exodus, Yahweh explains what his name means. It really means, "I will be what I choose to be." It can also mean, "I will be whatever I want to be." It can also mean, "I will be whatever you need of me at that time. I will be your provider. I will be your rescuer. I will be your supplier. I will be your wisdom. I will be whatever you need. That's what I will be to you." That's what his name means. And that is why he uses it when he's dealing with people, especially when he's dealing with ancient Israel, bringing them out of the land of Egypt. And we'll get into that a little more later. But notice here, in this fourth chapter of Genesis, it says that she again bare his brother Abel. So Eve gave birth to Cain and Abel. I want to look at this a little, stop here a moment, because in here we find something that's rather interesting. She again bare his brother Abel, and Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. Verse 3 is rather interesting. It says, "And in the process of time, it came to pass." In other words, time was going along, and suddenly something important came up. And we read there that it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto Yahweh. Cain was the oldest one, and he brought the fruit of the ground. And Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof. And Yahweh had respect unto Abel and his offering, but unto Cain and his offering he had no respect. And Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. You understand what happened here. There was a special time that came back in the Garden of Eden, or they were thrust out by then, but back with Cain and Abel. And it says, in the process of time, it came to pass something special. A special day came. We're not sure what it is. Some of the Bible scholars say it may have been the Passover season. And Cain and Abel were told to bring an offering at this time. Cain brought the fruit of the ground, the work of his hands, and gave that to Yahweh and said, "Here you are." But notice it says, "And Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock." He was a shepherd. He kept the sheep. And he brought the firstling. Abel came through the blood of the lamb. Cain came with the work of his hands. In addition to that, notice it says, "And Abel also brought the firstlings of his flock and the fat thereof." Now the fat was something they could keep, but not Abel. He brought that too. He gave that to Yahweh as well, so that he gave more than was required. And it goes on to say that Yahweh had respect unto Abel, what he had done, his offering. But unto Cain, he had no respect. In fact, as you probably noticed there, it says, "And Yahweh said unto Cain, Why are you angry, and why is your countenance fallen? If you do well, shall you not be accepted? But if you don't do well, sin lies at your door." He was actually telling Cain, look, if you straighten up and do the right thing, then I will respect your offering. I'll respect what you do, because you won't be offering me the fruit of your hands, the works of your hands. You'll be offering me the proper offering and live the way I want you to live. Well, you know what happened. Cain killed Abel. I don't want to deal with that right now. But as we move on down to this fourth chapter, in the 25th, verse 25 in this fourth chapter, it says, "Adam knew his wife again. She bare a son and called his name Seth, for Elohim said, she has appointed me another instead of Abel, whom Cain slew." So Seth, the name really means substitute. He was a substitute for Abel, who was slain. And verse 26 says, "And to Seth, to him also there was born a son, and he called his name Enos. Then began men to call upon the name of Yahweh." Now, if you have the Companion Bible, you'll find there that Bullinger says that they began to call or use Yahweh's name in a scurrilous way, in cursing and so on. And I don't know where Dr. Bullinger got that, but the writings of the Jews in the Onkelos and Jonathan both say that this was a bad situation, that men began to deride and to ridicule Yahweh's name. But we don't get that out of reading this in the Bible the way it is, except that somehow the Targums and some of the Jewish writings say that this was a scurrilous way to present Yahweh's name. But the point is, it does say that Yahweh's name was known by the people, that his name Yahweh was not hidden back in those days. In fact, when we were up in Fresno, a man was trying to say that Abraham never knew Yahweh's name. And, we'll come to that in a minute. But he did know his name, because you go back here and you find that they did use his name and called upon it. And it says they called upon the name Yahweh. So if somebody tries to say that Yahweh's name has been hidden all these years, nobody knew it. His name was known ever since Adam and Eve. Well, let's move on down. I want to go to chapter 9, if you would. Chapter 9 in the book of Genesis. And here in chapter 9, we find in verse 26 that Yahweh said, "Blessed be the Yahweh Elohim of Shem." Now, we skipped over part of this, but actually what it was, the three sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And Shem means name. That's the meaning of it. And Japheth means may he enlarge, make it bigger. In fact, as we read verse 27, that's what it says. Elohim shall enlarge Japheth and shall dwell in the tents of Shem. And Canaan shall be his servant. So we have three groups of people mentioned here. And you'll notice in chapter 10, a lot of scholars call this the Book of Nations. Because here in chapter 10, you have the three groups of people that sprang from Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. I remember years ago, one of the old sacred name people used to talk about that there were three groups of people. He said, even today you can see them. They are the straight hairs, the wavy hairs, and the kinky hairs. He said, those are the three groups. He said, that's really what it should say here. Well, I don't know about that, but anyway, we do have the three groups of people here. And you mostly will find that in chapter 10, beginning with verse 2, it talks about Japheth. And most of the scholars feel that they probably are the Oriental people, the straight hairs. And then we have in the, moving on down, we also have in verse 6, Ham, Cush, and Mitzrayim, Phut, and Canaan, and so on. But it isn't until we get over into the 21st verse that Shem again appears. And what Yahweh has done here, he's taken Ham and Japheth and got them out of the way, and then now he's going to concentrate on the name of Shem and the Shemite people. And you'll notice here in verse 21 it says, and Shem, also the father of all the children of Eber. From that word Eber, we get the word Hebrew. So sometimes people will try to say that Abraham was a Hebrew. And rightly he was, because he came from the line of Shem. But he was not a Jew, and he was not an Israelite, because they weren't even born yet. So we have here the name Eber, and as we move on down to this, you will find that the confusion of tongues comes along here. And you find in verse 30 that the tribes of Shem, their dwelling place was from Mesha, as you go to Sephar, a mount in the east. And these are the sons of Shem, after their families, after their tongues, in their lands, after their nations. The reason I feel that's important, because I believe that the Shemites continued to talk Hebrew. Because Hebrew was the language, we go back and look and notice all the names that are given in the book of Genesis, and they're all Hebrew names. And so here we find that the confusion of tongues took place, but it was primarily with those and not with the Shemites. Well, anyway, notice here in chapter 11, we'll move on down there to the 31st verse, because now we're coming into the pedigree of Abraham. Verse 31 says, and Terah took Abram his son, and Lot the son of Haran, his son's son, and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abraham's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to the land of Canaan. And they came to Haran and dwelt there. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Now, we have in chapter 12 the beginning of the history of Abraham and continues on through the rest of the Old Testament, the offspring and the progeny primarily of Abraham. And you'll notice here that in this 12th chapter, we have the promises that he gives to Abraham. And he says, get you out of your country and from your kindred, from your father's house, unto a land that I will show you. So now Yahweh tells Abraham to sever all relations with his family in Haran, because it's a pagan city. In fact, we find that he left Ur of the Chaldees, and Ur of the Chaldees, if you have a Bible with notes, it'll probably say a city of great pretensions, the moon city, where they worshipped everything that came along. Abraham is told, get out of Ur of the Chaldees, don't go back there. And I'll take you to a land that you don't know about, but I will show it to you. And then he says in verse 2, I will make you a great nation, Abraham, and I will bless you and make your name great, and I will, and you will be a blessing to others. I will bless them that bless you, curse them that curse you, and in you shall all families of the earth be blessed. So here we have the blessings that go to Abraham, and we find that he actually does leave. He doesn't quibble, he doesn't argue, he doesn't know, well, where am I going and why and all this. He just does what Yahweh says. As a matter of fact, some of the scholars have traced Abraham's path that he left when he left Ur of the Chaldees. And he doubled back and he went to Egypt and came back again and so on. And all these things are important. We'll get to that in a minute. But he took Lot with him, his nephew. And it says that he was 75 years old, Abraham was, when he left out of Haran. He took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, all their substance that they had gathered, and the souls they had gotten in Haran, and went forth to go to the land of Canaan. And the land of Canaan they came. And Abraham passed in there. And we find in verse 7, it says, then Yahweh appeared unto Abraham and said, unto your seed I will give this land. And there builded he an altar unto Yahweh, who appeared unto him. I wanted to make sure I mentioned verse 7, because here Abraham built an altar unto Yahweh. So he knew Yahweh's name. It says that in verse 7. And from there he went to Bethel, and Bethel means the house of El, and pitched his tent, having Bethel on the west, Ai on the east, and he built an altar unto Yahweh and called upon the name of Yahweh. So Abraham knew his name. The reason I want to bring these out, because if you're learning at all about the sacred name, you're going to find that people are going to say, well, nobody knew the name until Moses in the the sixth chapter of Exodus. Well, he knew it in the third chapter too. But anyway, people in the Old Testament knew Yahweh's name and they called upon it. As a matter of fact, as long as we're here in this book of Genesis, go to chapter 13. And notice in verse 4, again it says, unto the place of the altar which he had made there at the first, and there Abraham called on the name of Yahweh. So Abraham did indeed know his name. Now I want to skip ahead a little bit over to the 41st chapter of Genesis. And here in this 41st chapter, I want you to notice something here. In the 55th verse of Genesis, and we have Joseph in the land of Egypt. His dream, of course, was told to the Pharaoh. Joseph was named the second in command of all Egypt. But here in verse 55, it says, when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. There were 7 fat years that were given, you remember, and 7 lean years. And here we have the 7 fat years are over, and they've been storing up grain in the granaries, and Joseph had Pharaoh build all sorts of buildings to store the grain. So in verse 55 it says, when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread, and Pharaoh said unto all the Egyptians, go unto Joseph, he'll tell you what to do, because he was the second in command. He was in charge of the foodstuffs. And the famine was over all the face of the earth. And Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold unto the Egyptians, and the famine waxed sore in the land of Egypt. And all countries came to Egypt to Joseph to buy corn or to buy grain, because the famine was sore in the land. I want you to notice that this is interesting, that they all went to Egypt to buy the grain. I want you to do something now. Turn over to Matthew, the 2nd chapter. I want to note something here about the land of Egypt, what it really means. It has a different meaning than you might expect. In chapter 2, the book of Matthew, move down to Well, just briefly, Herod had the wise men stop with, to visit him, and they said, "Where's this man that's been, our baby been born king of the Jews? We want to go and visit him." And so the wise men continued to go. And verse 9 says, when they heard what the king said, that he wanted to know where this baby was, because he says, "I may also come to worship him." And so they moved on. They followed the star in verse 9. Verse 10, it says, when they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding joy. And they came to the house, and they saw the young child with Mary his mother. And they fell down and worshipped. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. Well, you know, this took place 2 years after the birth of Yahshua, because he was now in a house in verse 11. He was no longer in the manger. Yet these Christmas programs, you see, the three wise men are there with their camels and all that, and they're all together at one place. But this, it didn't happen that way. Not what the Bible says. The Bible says he was in a house. And you find that it happened about 2 years later. Okay, but the point is, in verse 12 it says, being warned of Elohim in a dream, these wise men should not return to Herod. They departed and went out another way. And when they were departed, the angel of Yahweh appeared unto Joseph, and he said, arise and take the young child, no longer a baby, he's a child now, and his mother, and flee to Egypt. And be thou there until I bring you word, for Herod will seek the young child to destroy him. Notice that Yahshua is going to Egypt. Abraham had gone to Egypt. And you find that the Bible talks about Egypt. What does Egypt really mean? Let's go over to the book of Revelation, chapter 11. In chapter 11... notice in verse 8, it talks about the two witnesses, and it says their dead bodies shall lie in the street of that great city, which spiritually is called Sodom and Egypt, where also our sovereign was impaled. So Egypt refers to sin, wickedness, and corrupt society. That's really what it stands for. And you will find here that the people in verse 9 were glad that these two were dead, because they were prophesying all sorts of things to befall them, which they didn't like. But that didn't, just being against these things by itself, didn't stop them. They continued to fall upon the people. Okay, I want you just to know where this comes from. Go over to the book of Hosea. It's after the book of Daniel. Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah. Hosea, chapter 11. You're probably already there, and here I am trying to find it. Here we are. Notice here, in Hosea chapter 11 and verse 1, we have the verse I'm looking for. When Israel was a child, then I loved him and called my son out of Egypt. Now you might think that this is rather strange. Israel was in Egypt. They were called out. They were called out as being freed from the slavery of the Egyptians. Abraham was called out. Yahshua was called out. So now I want you to go over to Exodus chapter 20. We'll go back there again. And notice here in the 20th chapter of Exodus how Yahweh starts out. Verse 1, it says, Yahweh or Elohim spoke unto all these words, saying, I am Yahweh, your Elohim, which have brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other deities, no mighty ones before me. Why does he start saying to ancient Israel about the house of bondage, about being in Egypt? I remember hearing a minister on the radio years ago, and he said, you don't have to keep the Ten Commandments. He said, because it says right there in that first verse that you're called out of Egypt. When were you ever in Egypt? Most of you are born here in America. You lived here all your life, and you probably will die here. You've never been to Egypt. So it doesn't apply to you. But what does Egypt really mean? It means that you're called out and away from the society you're living in. You're not to do what the society does. You're supposed to do what Yahweh wants you to do. And the society does all kinds of things that are wrong. In fact, I was kind of humbled the other day when I was talking to, last week or a couple of weeks ago, talking to a man who was a fairly good Jew. And he said, you know, he said, I used to think that us Jews really had it. I thought we knew what we were doing. I thought we had the truth. And you Gentiles that are in the churches were all wrong. I've changed my mind. He said, I found out that the Bible clearly says you're not to do anything to do away with Yahweh's name. And in fact, verse 7 here says, thou shalt not take the name of Yahweh or Elohim in vain. He will not hold him guiltless that takes his name in vain. He said it means to devastate his name, to bury his name, to get rid of his name. And he said, did you know that the Sepharim in 134 places replaced Yahweh's name with Adonai? They deliberately broke Yahweh's command. And he said, I was dumbfounded and chills went up and down my spine when I realized the Jews themselves had done that. And that they ridicule you Gentiles in the churches because you want to do away with the law. And the Jews who try to uphold the law have broken it themselves. So this is really what Yahweh says, that we are not to follow what the society does and do what they do in their pagan customs. He's called us out of that. We're not to do those things. I want you to go over to the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 5. Deuteronomy, as you know, is the second giving of the law. Just before Moses died, he was about to die, and then he rehearsed the law with the assembled Israelites, so that when they crossed over the Jordan River, the law would be fresh in their minds. And by the way, I think next year, year 2001, is a sabbatical year. And you find there in the 34th chapter of Exodus, we are to read the book of Deuteronomy during the Feast of Tabernacles. So next fall, when the Tabernacles comes, we'll probably spend one service in reading the book of Deuteronomy. Anyway, in Deuteronomy chapter 5, I want you to notice here in verse 6, I am Yahweh, your Elohim, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. And we know what bondage means. It means that bondage, you do what all society does. You follow the rules, and if you don't, well, you're kind of ostracized and set aside. But he says in verse 7, you shall have no other mighty ones before me. You should obey me first. I'm the one that's made everything. I am the Elohim that has created this earth. And I am Yahweh, the one who will be whatever you want me to be. Whatever you need, I will supply. And whatever you desire, I will think about. I may not give it to you because you may not need it. But I will supply your needs and not your wants. But notice here, again, when he talks about the Sabbath day, he actually adds in, I mean, the difference between the one in Exodus and the giving of the law here in Deuteronomy is that he adds this part in verse 15. Remember that you were a servant in the land of Egypt, and that Yahweh your Elohim brought you out thence through a mighty hand and a stretched out arm. Therefore Yahweh your Elohim commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. So this is something more that he's added in the book of Deuteronomy to remember the weekly Sabbath, the Saturday. He reminds us every time he gives the commandments. He talks about being a slave in Egypt. a slave to the world before Yahweh called us, and we found out that we shouldn't be doing some of these things. In chapter 3 of Exodus, if you'll turn over there, I want to point out something here. In chapter 3, we start in there with verse 1. Moses was keeping the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he was on the backside of the desert. That's where he got his BD degree, backside of the desert. I'm being facetious, of course. But anyway, it says, and the angel of Yahweh appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I will now turn aside to see with this great sight why the bush isn't burned up. And notice, the angel of Yahweh suddenly becomes Yahweh. And Yahweh saw that he turned, thank you, that he turned to see, and Elohim called to him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, here am I. Feels good. Thank you. And he tells them not to draw near and so on. But notice in verse 6, he says, I am the Elohim of your father, the mighty one of Abraham, mighty one of Isaac, the Elohim of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, and he was afraid to look upon Elohim. And Yahweh said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people, which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters and their sorrows and so on. And he says, I am come down now to deliver them. So now Yahweh is going to be the deliverer. And this is what he does. I don't want to go through all this, but move on down to verse 12. He says, I will be with you, and this shall be the token wherewith that I have sent you when you have brought forth the people out of Egypt. You shall serve Elohim upon this mountain. And Moses said unto Elohim, behold, when I come to the children of Israel, and shall say unto them, the Elohim of your fathers has sent me unto you, and they shall say unto me, what is his name? What shall I say unto them? And Elohim said unto Moses, I am that I am, A.A. Asher, A.A. And he said, thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am has sent me unto you. When you talk about Yahweh, he said, I am. What we're really saying is, he is. He is the mighty one. He is the provider. He is the protector. He is all these things. And so that is really what the verb of existence is, that he exists because he wants to exist. He gives life to whoever he wants to give life. He is the life giver. He is life itself. It means so many things. And it's rather interesting that he goes on to explain this. And verse 15, thus shalt you say unto the children of Israel, Yahweh, Elohim of your fathers, Elohim of Abraham, Elohim of Isaac, Elohim of Jacob, have sent me unto you. This is my name forever. This is my memorial unto all generations. There shouldn't be any question here that Moses knew Yahweh's name, didn't he? And yet, the other day I had a couple of weeks ago now, over in chapter 6, I had an argument from a man. He said Yahweh didn't reveal himself to Moses because over here in chapter 6, you read that, and he couldn't have known his name. Well, I want to clear this up a little bit maybe for you. Chapter 6 and verse 2, verse 1 says, and Yahweh said unto Moses, now shalt you see what I will do unto Pharaoh. With a strong hand will I let them go. That is, let Israel go. And with a strong hand shall he drive them out of his land. And Elohim spoke unto Moses, saying unto him, I am Yahweh. And I appeared unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob by the name of El Shaddai. El Shaddai is translated God Almighty. El, it means El, the greatest one. the mightiest one there can be, above all. And he says, but by my name Yahweh was I not known to them. Now, most scholars will admit that this verse is an enigmatic verse in a sense, because the way it's worded, it's actually a question. And you find some scholars say that, some say no, it isn't. But whatever, what he's really saying, wasn't I known unto them by the name Yahweh? Didn't I perform miracles to those people, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? And didn't they have miraculous births and so on? Wasn't I known unto them by the things that I did, that this is who I was? He goes on to talk about establishing his covenant with them in verse 4. And he goes on to talk about it in the land of their pilgrimage and so on. And then he goes on to say what he is going to do and how he's going to deliver Israel. Notice here he says in verse 6, say unto the children of Israel, I am Yahweh. I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will rid you out of their bondage, and I will redeem you with a stretched out arm and with great judgments, and will take you to me for a people, and will be to you a mighty one. And you shall know that I am Yahweh, your Elohim, which brings you out from the burdens of the Egyptians. And I will bring you into the land concerning which I swear to give it to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And I will give it to you for an heritage. I am Yahweh. I do believe the reason that we find that Yahweh often refers to the land of Egypt, he's talking about the world. And he wants us to leave the world behind and to do the right things, to be a blessing to other people, to do the things that he wants us to do and live the life he wants us to do, and not go back to Egypt, not go back to the world. Because we find in the book of Revelation, Egypt stands for the world and all the things that are like glitter and are gold and are wonderful and happy and so on. At least the world thinks they are, but it's a lot of empty praises, a lot of emptiness, and it passes away. The world passes away in the lust thereof, but he that abideth in the will abide forever. Let's hope and pray that we're all able to stand fast when these days come. May Yahweh bless you and be with you.